will drop into the teens and 20s. The rest of today around Champaign-Urbana, sunny skies, the high 22 degrees, increasing clouds tonight with not as cold temperatures, the low 17 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, a chance of flurries, the high 28, winds up to 20, west winds up to 15 miles an hour, gusts as high as 25. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow night, then clearing, the low 11 degrees, winds up to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies on Friday with a high around 28 degrees, winds up to 15 miles an hour. Mostly clear Friday night with a low of 17. Mostly sunny Saturday with a high of 35. Mostly cloudy Saturday evening, the low 22. Mostly sunny Sunday with a high of 32. Sunday night and Monday, mostly clear skies with a low around 22, the high 38 degrees. Right now, temperatures at Indianapolis, we have 17 degrees looking around Illinois, 22 at Bloomington, 21 in Danville and Decatur. At Willard Airport, we have 19 degrees, and on Friends Plaza in Urbana, 20 degrees. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine at 1241. I'm Jeff Bossert. Sports betting happens every day, but betting on the outcome of a professional game is only legal in Nevada because of a 1992 federal law. Sports commentator Frank DeFord says that's not just unconstitutional, it also defies the reality of illegal betting on sports.
For those dearly devoted of you who paid attention to me in September, I noted that the best bet in the NFL had proven to be whenever a West Coast team played an East Coast team at night, because the Pacific players had their body clocks better set. There would be two such night games this year, and sure enough, both times the West Coast team beat the point spread. Not only that, but the first game of the World Series also fit that formula, and sure enough, the underdog San Francisco Giants routed arguably the best pitcher in baseball, Justin Verlander of Detroit, and went on to sweep the series. Unfortunately, since all you NPR listeners are, I'm sure, law-abiding citizens, only those relatively few of you living in the great silver state of Nevada could have legally gotten bets down on my wise circadian tip. Thanks to a bizarre 1992 federal law, Nevada is blessed, the only state that can allow gamblers to bet legally on a single game and thereby help fill the state coffers with a cut for facilitating the bets, what's called vigorous in the trade. New Jersey seeks to buck the law and allow Nevada-style sports books. Predictably, the four major team sports and the NCAA have sued the Garden State to stop its effort to be as equal before the law as Nevada. And in a baffling decision, a U.S. district judge has somehow concluded that it's fair to argue that legal gambling in states other than Nevada would create a negative image about games. That's like the Fed saying nobody but Georgia can legally grow peaches without damaging American peach taste buds. Now consider, the NCAA, that noble bastion of hypocrisy, makes virtually all its money from its basketball championship, March Madness, which derives most of its popularity, and hence its TV bonanza, from illegal office pools. And, of course, the professional leagues, wink, wink, publicize fantasy leagues, which are nothing but betting vehicles. Altogether, in the United States, betting on real games with illegal bookmakers is estimated at $380 billion a year. People bet sports everywhere, on the internet, the world over. Gambling, in fact, promotes interest in sports. The NFL in particular is essentially America's casino. But the sanctimonious commissioners and the blowhard who runs the NCAA maintain nonsensically that legal gambling hurts the integrity of sports, while somehow illegal bookmaking remains beneficial for their games. Also, If I were Chris Christie and Bruce Springsteen and Cory Booker and Bon Jovi and Snooki, I'd want to know why the federal government gives preferential treatment to one state over the other 49. I don't think those are fair constitutional odds.
NPR sports commentator Frank DeFord. We have one more piece of unfinished business from the closing of 2012 for the 38th year. Lake Superior State University in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, has released its annual list of words and phrases banished from the Queen's English for misuse, overuse, and general uselessness. Herb Trix has more.
Please stop my head from exploding. That was the plea last year from one anguished person making a nomination for the list, but it could probably sum up people's feelings this year and every year. Tom Pink is Director of Public Relations for Lake Superior State and has helped compile the word banishment list for 22 years.
We have several phrases this year on the list that were made popular by politicians. Since this was a presidential election year, we would expect that. We see more words and phrases associated with politics during those years. And this year, fiscal cliff received more nominations probably than anything I've ever seen over the years. Fiscal cliff, of course, you're seeing how to survive the fiscal cliff. Five things you should know about the fiscal cliff. You start to think that you have to carry around an emergency kit in the trunk of your car.
And about the fiscal cliff, as one person said, I'm equally worried about the river of debt and mountain of despair.
Followed closely by kick the can down the road and double down and job creators.
According to one nomination, job creators are actually job depleters because they make their money by laying off people. Another word now banned is actually an acronym from social media, YOLO, which stands for You Only Live Once.
But I think we start to see nominations maybe from younger people who popularized that term and then maybe aren't interested in hearing their parents use it now.
As one nominator said, used by Twitter philosophers who think they've uncovered a deep secret of life, also used as an excuse to do really stupid things. And another said, only a real yo-yo would use the term YOLO. Tom Pink says next on the list is bucket list.
And again, people say, well, what's wrong with bucket list? I like that. Well, it seems that many, many people like it. And when the movie came out, it was interesting. It was creative, these guys wanting to do some big things before they die. But now a bucket list could include a two-for-one sale at the local mall.
And in the food category, we can now add boneless wings because they're just pieces of chicken, not really wings. Other entries on this year's list include guru, for an expert of any kind, and passion. No one really has a simple interest anymore. Now it's a passion. And while he spends the waning days of one year and the first few days of the next doing interviews with newspapers, radio shows, TV stations, and for social media, Pink wonders whether it's worth all this time and effort.
We struggle with the list every year because it's a whimsical thing. It's when you compare it to other things that we have to do in our jobs, and the most important is to bring students to LSSU and make sure that they have a good experience here. We struggle with how much time we can devote to the list, but you know, after 38 years, it doesn't show any signs of fading, and perhaps we should make more hay with it.
And how about a billboard on the edge of town? The Chamber of Commerce already includes the list in its promotional materials. Nominations for banishment are accepted at any time at the Lake Superior State University website. That's at lssu.edu. I'm Herb Trix.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 2nd of January, 2013. It's the birthday of Roger Miller, born Fort Worth, Texas, 1936. We know him best for his song, King of the Road, Trailers for Sale or Rent, Rooms to Let, 50 Cents. Though he said his favorite of all his songs was You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. It's the birthday of Christopher Durang, born Montclair, New Jersey, 1949, raised Roman Catholic, went to a high school taught by monks, thought he might become a monk himself, but instead he became a playwright. And when he was 28, he had his first big hit with the play Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All for You, which the New York Times described as a satire about a demonic nun. He went on to write Beyond Therapy, Baby with the Bathwater, and currently on Broadway, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Today's the birthday of cartoonist Linda Barry, born in Richland Center, Wisconsin, 1956. She's the creator of Ernie Pook's Comique, a weekly strip that ran in alternative papers for nearly 30 years. Her friend Matt Groening was the man who created The Simpsons, but the market for Linda Barry's comics sort of dried up in 2008, so she moved on to other things. And now she goes around the country giving workshops called Writing the Unthinkable for people, she says, bartenders, janitors, office workers, anyone who's given up on being a writer but still wonders what it might be like to write. Here's a poem for today by Jacqueline Berger, The Conductor. There's no mention, of course, in the program that the conductor has Parkinson's. He enters the stage, stands for a moment facing the audience, his hands by his sides, tapping air. Then he holds them together, an act of gratitude. We're gathered, we can do this, and of firmness, each hand forcing the other to be still. His expression darkly bemused the good news, bad news. I've lived long enough to lose so much, or maybe he's staving off our sympathy. Don't clap because of this. Then he turns his back to us, begins his work, Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony. No baton, and from behind, his body is jerky as a boy's, jumpy with excitement. His hands shake when they scoop the sections of the orchestra, as though pulling a weighted net from the sea. Still, I wonder if this work is easier than taking on the ordinary objects of a day, buttons, keys, and pens. I am an old man, he must think when he looks in the mirror, briefly naked, before trading the bathrobe for the tie and tails. And when he turns to us again, after the last movement, he looks both old and young, his face washed of the expression in the program photograph, clearly taken years before, one eyebrow slightly raised, his smile more satisfied than happy. Now he shows us his innocence, if innocence is what the face unconstructed can be called. What else can he do while his fingers tap their useless code?